Hello, Barcelona, and welcome to the new English Radio Barcelona Blue on La Marina Cat 102.5 FM. I'm Virgil, still and always. In the past few weeks, we've talked about many types of relationships and the many benefits of being in Catalonia, but how do you know what's right for you in either one of these situations? Joining us today to help sort it all out are psychotherapist Susan Kirshner, multicuritous, soon-to-be expats, former politicians, Donna and Arthur Lerman. Welcome to the show, folks.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Well, same qualification, they're here from the States, you know, visiting our fair country and our fair province and our great city in terms of a lot of things they're thinking about and sorting out in their lives. So the thing that we want to do is kind of get a little bit of a perspective in terms of all the things that are important to them right now and they're going to be important to us as well. Now, firstly, Susan, you help people, individuals, find their best selves and the direction in life. How do you help them create or find the best environment in which to live?
Well, I think the first step is to discover who you are and to find your best self and to find who you are at your core, the person you were born to be, not the person who was criticized, negatively influenced in many ways.
That's your own anxiety. That's one thing that, you know, a lot of people will say, you got to find yourself. How do you do that?
Well, being a psychotherapist, I very much believe in psychotherapy, and I know it has helped me to find and discover my very best self. I think meditation can be very good to help you get down to your basic core. So insight is the first step, and I think the second step is action. By doing things that are a little bit challenging, maybe starting with baby steps, and each time you do something and you succeed, you feel better and better about yourself, and then you can continue and move on.
Such as?
Having new experiences, such as traveling, discovering new places, discovering how you feel in different places.
Well, a recent report from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine points out that more than one-third of adults age 45 and older feel lonely, and nearly one-fourth of adults age 65 and older are considered to be socially isolated. Now, what do you see are some of the causal factors here, and what can someone do if they feel these things?
Well, I think the first step is to enjoy your own company. And part of enjoying your own company is liking who you are. And being able to enjoy things without getting feedback from other people. Not being into yourself so you can hear and see and feel everything around you and appreciate the world.
Okay. We'll be back to talk more with our guest right after this.
Small talk, no conversation. That look makes me impatient. I can't tell what you're thinking. Please tell me what you're thinking. Last night we were more than fine. Just tell me if you changed your mind. Change your mind, 'cause I'm all in. I'm calling, no answer. But you text me when you feel like, when it feels right to you. But I'm all in. I'm falling faster. But if you're looking at me with the heart of doubt, don't kiss me right now. Don't tell me that you need me. Don't show up at my house, all caught up in your feelings. Don't run me round and round. Don't build me up just to let me down. Just to let me down, down, down. Don't mess with my head. Don't tell me you're falling with your feet still on the ledge. I'm all out of breath, baby. Don't run me round and round. Don't kiss me, no, don't kiss me right now. Just leave it if you don't mean it. Oh, yeah. You know you got me in. in the palm of your hand, but I left those hands. Feels right to you, but I'm all in, I'm falling faster. But if you're looking at me with a heart of doubt, don't kiss me right now. Don't tell me that you need me. Don't show up at my house all caught up in your feelings. Don't run me round and round. Don't build me up just to let me down. Just to let me down, down, down. Hey, don't mess with my head. Don't tell me you're falling with your feet still on the ledge. I'm all out of breath. Baby, don't run me round and round. Don't kiss me, no, don't kiss me right now. On your lips, just leave it.
And that was Love with Mean It. Now, Arthur, you and Donna have both been involved in the political process in your states with strong roots in your communities. But why are you now considering moving, at least in part, to Europe?
Well, Virgil, that's a great question, and I appreciate it. And so there are several reasons for us considering a partial or full move to Europe. One is lifestyle. It's just so much more comfortable here. It's a slower pace. You know, in the United States, things are very fast-paced, and I think there's a quality of life that's missing that you can really experience here in Europe in terms of a slower pace and also a sense of community and family seems to be much stronger and certainly is displayed more obviously on the streets than is the case in the States. But there are other reasons as well. Affordability is certainly part of it. You know, while I know that individuals in Europe are challenged by the inflation these days and the cost of heating their homes, at the same time, we're certainly experiencing that in the States. But still, things here, by state standards, remain very affordable. Healthcare is a disaster in the States. I think the healthcare system in the United States is on the verge of collapse, both in terms of cost as well as in terms of quality. We know that there are a lot of doctors and nurses who are leaving the field because of their experience with COVID, but also because of the pressure put on them by a for-profit environment that healthcare right. operates under at a time when there's increased need for healthcare, especially as many people within our country are aging. And, you know, we all know that people, as they get older, tend to need more health care than when they're younger. And then the last thing that needs to be said is the politics in the United States. The politics, it's very disturbing. It you know, the direction that we're going in is really uncomfortable and something that really, you know, we're very concerned about, having been involved right. with politics. I've been involved with politics for over 30 years. I've never seen anything like what we're experiencing in the States these days. And I don't know where it's going to go, but I don't see it moving in a more positive direction in the foreseeable future. So for all those reasons, and there are more, I'm sure,
right.
you know, those are the reasons why we're thinking of of relocating to Europe.
Well, Donna, you were a nurse at one point in your career, and you're also involved in city politics. Now, from that standpoint, having the boots on the ground, as it were, in the cities, how do you look at the situation here in Barcelona? Is there things that you've taken away from your experience here that would have been wonderful to be doing back in the States, or hopefully might happen one of these years in the States?
I think Arthur hit on some really good points about the quality of life. There is a lack of community. For example, there is a site in our community called Nextdoor, and whenever someone posts something, even something innocuous, there are people who kind of have to hit back. People are so amazingly polarized.
Hmm. So they just can't accept a comment without having their own riposte.
That's right. Something has happened over the last few years where it's brought out the worst in people. And I find myself, I love talking politics as well as anybody else, but I find myself trying to be a peacemaker on social sites, you know, saying, have you talked to the person you're upset with instead of putting it out there on this neighborhood site, for example? Yeah, there's a different energy. And the energy for me in Europe, when Susan talked about how you feel and being true to yourself, that's how I feel when I'm in Europe. That's how I feel here in Barcelona. I feel a sense of joy. I feel a sense of lightness. I feel connected. I love the diversity. I love the food. I love it. There's just an energy here that is sorely lacking in the States.
No, I agree with it. Now, we talked a bit over the past few days about the impact that Airbnb and other household rental schemes have had on cities. Tell us a bit about your thoughts and how you've possibly changed your own engagement with them.
Well, I think Airbnb, while originally it was an interesting concept, has really gotten out of hand and is creating enormous problems for housing for people. For young people trying to purchase their new homes, for older people trying to stay in their homes. And really what we've done, and we do it unfortunately all too well in the United States, is we commoditize things. Mm. You know, that people don't think of their home anymore as a home, they think of it as an investment. And there's a quality that's lacking in that. And I think what's happened with Airbnb is that, you know, homes that would otherwise have been available at a more reasonable price. Because when somebody purchases a home for an Airbnb, they're really looking at it from a business point of view, from a lens of profitability, as opposed to a home that they're going to be in for an extended period of time and part of that neighborhood or community. And so it's really driven up prices, as well as it's taken an enormous amount of units that had previously been available for rent off the market. Exactly. I heard a statistic about a month ago that I find it hard to believe, but the statistic was that there are now more Airbnb units in New York City than there are rental units.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I think what Portugal is on the verge of doing is to really limit Airbnbs. It's my understanding, and I don't think it's been formalized yet, that at some point over the next few years, you either need to live in the home that you've purchased, or you need to do a long-term rental, but you can't do a few days or
right.
Whatever. That said, just true confessions, if you don't mind, and that's that we actually do Airbnb in our home, although up until recently we've always been in our home and shared our home as opposed to not being there at all. And I think there is a qualitative difference in that.
There is definitely.
But also, you know, being opportunists in a way. You know, we've been doing traveling in Europe. We did 2 months last year. We're doing 3 months this year. And we did take advantage of Airbnb. You know, there is a lot to be said for it, but we do it with mixed feelings because we understand that the impact that it has on people in the building, people in the neighborhood, people in the community is really not a good thing.
Well, again, you know, being former, I won't essentially say all of you legislative, but being formally involved in the political process, what should the role of government be in this sector, not only in terms of the Airbnb, but then looking at available housing for the homeless?
I mean, I think government, let me say a few, and if you want to chime in, anyone else?
Well, you know she wants to chime in.
Sure.
She's there holding herself back. You can see that.
I think a very distinct difference between the United States and Europe, Western Europe, based on our limited experience, is that there's a sense of a social contract that exists here, where, you know, it doesn't undermine a capitalistic approach to an economy, but there's a general agreement within society that we're going to make sure that people have certain basic needs met, you know, in terms of housing, in terms of food, in terms of staying warm, in terms of education. And that social compact or contract is used to exist to a greater extent in the United States in years past than it does today, and, you know, and that's just being eroded. So I think it's important for government to play that role and make sure that people's basic needs, healthcare, housing, food, are met. And I think it's the good news is that the political and social context here in Europe is much more understanding and committed to doing that than in the case of the United States. Another example, frankly, is that the United States has, for years, had an outstanding public school system that's being completely undermined as a result of the privatization of education. And so that's exactly. Just one of a number of examples.
That and privatization of prisons, along with that. But again, we'd like to talk more with Susan, Don, and Arthur right after this. That was Birdie with Loneliness. Now, I've always said that being alone is not necessarily being lonely. Now, how would you differentiate the subject, Susan, and what would a single person do to have a stable life without loneliness? What are the specifics that you would give as a guide for them?
Well, I think the first thing is to enjoy your own company. And I think liking who you are will help you to enjoy your own company.
Okay, let's stop there for a second. I mean, that's, again, a very great generalization. But as a people, you know, oftentimes we are in groups, we're in teams, we're in schools, whatever. And by the time, you know, it happens in life that we are by ourselves, we don't necessarily have a frame of reference in terms of, you know, what do we do when I'm by myself? How do I find myself as a single person, as a person without context of friends or team or group or whatever?
Well, I think the first thing is not to feel that being alone is a negative thing. It's okay to be alone. I see it as positive if you're able to be alone and enjoy yourself and do things and not have a need to always be with someone, to always get someone's approval, get someone to agree with you, but to just take things in and love them yourself. The second thing is, if you want to connect with other people, is find what you have a passion for. Find what you love doing. Not looking for people, but looking for things that give you a lot of enjoyment.
Okay.
And, well, passion. And
now, Don, you and Arthur are often separated from each other because of your work. How did you cope with the alone time? You know, were children a positive or a neutral factor? And how are you facing the next few years together in a new country?
Well, when we were in politics, our children had grown and had left, so they had scattered to various places. But I found, you know, I was the oldest of eight children. I never had time alone, and got married young. And I found that when Arthur was in the legislature, I was able to actually see the state building from our bedroom window. I'd wave goodbye or good night. And I enjoyed the time alone. I had a goal that I would read every book that I aspired to read, and I'm realizing that's not a goal I'll ever meet. But I've come to really enjoy time alone. And what I do is, moment by moment, I've learned to ask myself what would bring me joy in this moment, and to do that. And okay, sometimes it's reading, and sometimes it's cooking, sometimes it's going for a walk, but to really be in touch with what sparks joy in my life.
Which is a good one. I think, again, it's difficult. Now, Arthur, you were in the midst many of late night sessions and all that, and I'm sure that might have brought a great deal of satisfaction, maybe not a lot of joy. But so how did you cope with the absence of the home and of Donna?
Very well. No. No, just kidding, of course. Well, you know, quite frankly, you just get into a certain rhythm at some point. You know, your life takes on a certain, I think our lives always have a certain rhythm. It just, you know, it just changes at different points in our lives. And, you know, at that time, we certainly supported each other, respected each other, enjoyed the conversations that we had that were full of all sorts of issues, if you will, or things to talk about, because there were so many things coming up in our lives at that time. You know, we appreciated each other's counsel back then. So even though there were times when I was not thrilled with the amount of time that I spent away from Donna and away from home, there was really a very good, positive upside to it as well, which I think ties back to what we talked about a few minutes ago, and that's that I think it's really important. I agree completely with Susan's point about you need to love yourself, you need to be comfortable with yourself, you need to be comfortable in your own skin. But I also think that for many people, you need to be engaged in some way. And And so I know in the States, and I think probably to a lesser extent here, I think we need to create new institutions to do that. You know, it used to be family, and that's what you have here. But families aren't what they used to be, at least in the United States. And I don't think we've really come up with a good sort of equivalent for it. You know, in our neighborhood in Florida, you know, people can live very isolated lives.
Right.
I mean, to the point where it's even odd. I mean, you know, you have automatic garage door openers, so you don't even, you drive in, the door closes, you go into your house, and when you leave, it's the reverse, and you can, you know, not even have any contact with neighbors. So
exactly.
It's a very isolated lifestyle right now that prevails, and I think we need to create new sort of institutions to be able to give people the opportunity to interact and really support each other.
We had on the show last week an author who just published a new work, and it was titled "There Is Something Else" or "Someone Else." You know, I think the pandemic forced us to look for that someone else who resides inside of us, you know, which has often not been an easy journey to take. So again, we started looking at that. We aren't always aware of that inner person that is there, that someone else we can turn to, and similar kind of things. So I'll throw it out there for all of you just to kind of kick back and with what you think that means.
Well, I think being alone, you discover your strength and how you can manage and figure things out.
How do you do that?
Out of need, a need to do it.
Well, I think one of the things that he brought out in talking about, you know, his character in the book, he made the allusion to jazz. And basically saying that he found himself thrown into a life without a pattern, permeated by jazz improvisation. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a case here where jazz was a metaphor for life and the ability to make the transition by improvisation, doing something new, something different, playing off of the page.
If I can jump in, Susan, if you don't mind, I think part of it is you know, just understanding who you are and enjoying that, but also within that context, recognizing the amount of social contact that really works for you. I mean, we have some friends who do very well living more what we would probably call, if we were a fly on the wall, an isolated lifestyle. But there are a lot of other people who really need that social contact, you know? I think you have to know yourself well and be comfortable in your own skin, but you also, part of that is just realizing how much socializing, how many friends, how do you fit that into your life? And recognizing that it's going to change. I mean, our lives change all the time. You know, you turn a page in the music and it could be a whole different tempo. And I think that's the case in our lives as we go through various phases. And for those of you who may be younger, it doesn't change as you get older. I mean, the challenges are perpetual within our lives. But I think it's recognizing your needs to feel a sense of fulfillment and joy, and recognizing that it changes over time. That's really, I think, part of successfully aging.
I think I'd throw a question to you, Don, from the standpoint that, you know, as we see more people thinking about establishing new lives away from their traditional homes and countries, how would you counsel them in terms of making this type of life change? Because again, in many cases, you know, the woman is responsible for maintaining the home, the core of the home. How do you see you're making your next transition from, you know, the States to Portugal or Spain or wherever?
That's the challenge, because it's the family. You know, we have four children, and if we move, how is that relationship going to be affected? Although the kids say they're more likely to visit us in Europe than they are to visit us in Florida, and I'm sure they're telling us the truth. But Susan said something earlier that really struck a chord for me. It was about feeling good, and it was also about having an insight and then taking a baby step, and how I'm going to view this possible move to Europe, which is becoming more and more real by the minute, is not see it as the rest of my life.
Okay.
Take a step, rent a place for a year, try it out.
Perfect.
As I walk around Barcelona right now, I imagine that I'm living there, you know, and it just, how does it feel? And it feels really, really good. But if I think like, okay, I'm going to make the move and this is it, then it gets a little scary. So I think making a commitment of 1 year, giving it that, is the way that it's going to happen.
Well, I think it's key, because what you're suggesting and makes all the sense in the world is that, okay, I'm not going to know what it's like until I try it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So let me try it. It doesn't feel good, okay, I'll go back and I'll do something else.
Right.
But if I really like it, then okay, then we're able to take the next step in terms of saying, all right, how do we go from the 1 month, 1 year, whatever, to 2, 3, 5, and all the rest?
That's right. And it's interesting because that's what we tell a lot of people who want to move to Florida. Hmm. In the United States, one of the goals that a lot of people have is to move to where it's warm. And we tell people, before you purchase a home, rent for a year. So I think I'll follow my own advice and do that very thing.
No, I think it makes sense. I think, you know, the way you guys have approached it has been perfect. I mean, you came with friends last year,
mm-hmm.
and now you're here on your own, and you know, expanding the scope of the familiarization,
mm-hmm.
and getting, you know, different comparisons, and being able then to say, all right, I like this, not so crazy about that,
mm-hmm.
and then with all in balance, you're saying, I think I like it. Now I think I can really make a leap for a little bit further.
Yes, it's about becoming more and more familiar with preferences.
Mm.
You know, it's like you get clearer on, well, this is going to work and this is not going to work. Like I've already discovered that if I'm going to be happy here, I need a bathtub. Little things like that really determine your quality of life.
And a washer. And dryer.
A washer. I don't know about the dryer. I admire the fact that people hang their clothes. You know, I'm very concerned about the environment.
Right.
So I hang my clothes at home in Florida. Solar drying.
Which is perfect.
I think part of it for me too is recognizing that when you go someplace new, it's all new. And
yes.
You know, you may not like it or you may like it, but in any event, in our case here in Europe, we love it. But everything's new, and so, you know, you're just stimulated by all of
mm-hmm.
that. And then no matter where you are, at some point, what is so much in front of you initially becomes part of the background, and you no longer distinguish it the way you did when you first experienced it. And I think part of it is getting through that initial period of just the excitement of the newness of things, and then seeing, okay, when that sort of fades away, when you're not experiencing that, sort of what's left, and is it fundamentally what's important to you in living your life?
Is it sensory overload?
Oh, and not in our case. I mean, I think it's again, I think, you know, different personalities can enjoy or not enjoy different levels of stimulation. But, you know, we can't get enough of it. I mean, you know,
Bring more.
Absolutely.
I am a lifelong learner. I love to learn about cultures, about the history. I'm just learning so much here about the history. And that stimulates me, and it makes me feel alive. Mm-hmm. And I can promise you one thing, that if we move to Barcelona, first thing I'm going to do is learn the language. I'm going to school. I'm going to learn the language. I don't want people speaking English to me. I want to be, as you know, everywhere I go, I'm pronouncing
right.
the words, right, Virgil?
Exactly. We'll be back to talk with more of our guests and some closing comments right after this.
Someone, but not
me off my feet. I finally found the one that makes me feel complete.
It started over coffee. We started out as friends. It's funny how from simple things the best things begin.
This time it's different. It's all because of you. It's better than it's ever been. Cause we can talk it through.
My favorite line was, can I call you sometime? It's all you had to say to take my breath away.
This is it.
Barbara Streisand with Bryan Adams. I finally found someone. Well, as we start talking about this and the fact that you guys have finally found a new place that you're going to call your own, you know, you obviously you've lived your lives in the States. You know, being able to start severing those cords and being able to get past the dissonance, as it were. How are you going to do it? What's happening? What are your thoughts, Arthur?
Well, we're very excited about it, you know, and so, you know, I think you have to be true to yourself. I think you have to understand what works for you and what doesn't work for you. I think being willing to take some risk is a good thing. So in the case of Donna and me, I think we're quite comfortable continuing to pursue that. I think, you know, we want to maintain relationships. Obviously, family connections are very important to us. But the key is really figuring out a way to, you know, how can you, for lack of a better term, which I really don't like, have it all, you know, how can you maintain those things that are important to us? How can we maintain those things that are important to us living in the States versus, you know, and bring them, not to lose them, but to bring them with us as, and then add another dimension to our lives by being in a different environment.
Well, one of the things you were kind of mentioning is the fact that, you know, you've worked all your life doing certain things, and all of us have worked our lives doing certain things. All of a sudden, you're not doing that thing anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think retirement is a huge challenge. I think people who get unemployed have a taste of it. But when you retire, then all of a sudden your identity is sort of gone in a way, or at least a good part of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real adjustment that I think is, you know, while many younger people say, oh, it'd be great to retire, it's very different when you get there. And a quick example from a part of my experience, I've been retired a little over a year now, and we've spent a good part of that time actually traveling, so that's taking the edge off. But I have noticed that even in terms of decision making and memory and things like that, in my last position, I was CEO of a good-sized organization. I had, well over 100 people on staff, and was constantly having to be sharp and make decisions and recall things. And I've noticed a decline in that level of cognitive ability, if you will. I'm not worried about it being terrible, but it's just been an interesting observation of that in the absence of stimulation, you use it or lose it, really. That's
exactly,
you know, whatever it may be. And so
the mind is a muscle.
It's true. And you know, moving here is really exercising that muscle a lot. And so for us, and I can speak for the two of us because I do all the time, but and then get suffer the consequences.
I was just going to say, right?
But I think for both of us it works, you know. Is that a fair statement?
I think that, yes, I think it's a fair statement. And we have friends right now who can't believe that we're traveling to Europe. They just can't imagine doing what we're doing. We're not in a tour group. You know, Arthur puts everything together. He's the logistics guy, and he'll say, what do you think of this? And I'll say, fine. Because for me, it's all a new discovery. So he handles all of the planning, and I go along and learn as much as I can, and share with the folks back home. I'm sharing every single day with the folks back home what we're learning and discovering on this trip.
And back to your question, Virgil, I think it's easier to make the move now because of electronic connections.
Right.
Probably 10 years ago or 15 years ago, you didn't see people. I mean, you can Zoom, you can FaceTime. I mean, you can maintain those relationships in a way similar to what we do with our grandchildren, because they don't live near where we live. They live some distance away. And so the difference between 500 miles and 5,000 miles electronically is really not noticeable.
Now, Susan, I would ask you from the standpoint of a similar kind of vein in conversation, that when you have people who have been in therapy with you, who might say, I want a whole new environment to maybe change my style of living, how would you guide them to be able to make the appropriate changes towards severing those cords and severing ties and building new ones?
Well, I think they need to search their heart and figure out what they're looking for, what their passion is, where they can find that.
More. Tell me more.
Okay. Again, I don't know if it's so much the place as the person and who you are and who you meet and who you connect with. You know, some people feel if they lived here, they would be happy. Or if they lived, I don't agree with that. I don't think it's where you live. I think it's how you feel about yourself and the people you connect with wherever you go.
Okay, so it's important for you to reestablish relationships.
Absolutely.
Or you don't have them to establish them.
Right, and find activities that you have passion for, and then you will find your kind of people who you can share that passion with.
Okay, now, you two of you, Don and Arthur, are in the midst of extensive travel right now, beginning to set the parameters of the things that really you like and that you want to have in your life going forward. What do you see your next steps to be?
Well, we're going to continue to travel from country to country and start looking at what those preferences are. This, not that. This feels good. You know, this doesn't feel so good. You know, everybody almost everybody in the United States comes from Europe. I mean, there's a lot of people from Europe in the U.S. We have European backgrounds. So in a way, it feels like coming home. Sometimes I think, why did they leave? And I'm sure they had their good reasons. But so it's keeping an open mind, making connections. We have actually made friends everywhere we have traveled, you being one of them, Virgil. So we make great connections, and we learn through those connections as well. And everyone loves, the people we've met love where they live, and they sell us.
Right.
You know, we have people trying to sell us. Portugal's the place, or England's the place, or Spain is the place. And that's really fun. And it just encourages me to do as much as I can do in a particular place and see what shakes out at the end.
And we put together a short list, you know, of places that we're thinking about moving to. But I think the change that has happened even in the last 3 weeks as we, you know, begin this adventure that we're on is that we don't need, it doesn't need to be a permanent connection, a permanent commitment. You know, the idea and we love Barcelona. Barcelona is a wonderful place. And the idea of moving to Barcelona for a year and figuring out after a year whether it's a place that we really want to settle more stable roots, whether we want to make a commitment to being here for a further period of time, is probably the approach that we'll end up taking. That's one of the ahas that we've gotten out of the short amount of time that we've been on this current trip, is that I think we're clearer than ever that we want to move out of the United States, or I shouldn't say it that way. We want to move to a different place, that Western Europe has great appeal, that Barcelona and some places we've been in, Portugal and France, also have some appeal. No, it's just, you know, I think we're going to be spending time in those places, that some places we've never been to before, but also places that we have visited before. And I think after that, I think we'll have a feel for where we want to make a commitment to, not for the rest of our lives, but for, you know, 6 months, 9 months, or a year, and really get a feel for it, you know.
I think one of the things that you kind of alluded to, you started talking about making a list of the places. I think also you probably have made a list in terms of those things that are necessary to be in a place. So, I mean, what are some of the things that, you know, you said, okay, if it has this, then, okay, I can deal with it. I can deal with it. Yes, Stata, go ahead.
Really good food, good restaurants. We have not had a bad meal in Barcelona. So that's really important to me. The lots of diversity. I just love the diversity and the people. And a new language to learn. Those are the things.
And I would add to it, the way people, the way we're able to connect with people, even as tourists. Mm. You know, you get a feel for, you know, you can go to a patisserie, or you can just do things that are normally part of lives, and you can get a sense for how you're treated by the people who you may not be able to communicate with very well because you don't speak the language, but you get a feel for it. And also, fundamentally, whether we feel safe or not. You know, that's an
important concern.
Yeah.
Oh, this feels so safe. Oh, that's another thing we didn't even talk about. That is what's happening in the U.S. in regards to safety. I mean, it's scary what's happening there. And some people may say I'm hyperbolic because most people go around their daily lives in a normal way. But you just never know what's around the corner. And here in Barcelona, I feel very, very safe walking around the city. And I've been told by people here that it's very safe, that they feel comfortable walking around the city, even very late at night.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Yeah. And I would say for people who live here that you're very fortunate. You know, you live in a wonderful place that really checks most, if not all, the boxes for us. And to not take it for granted, because, you know, for many years we assumed that the American way of life was a particular way, and then the last, I'd say, 5 years, that's been turned upside down. So I think you really need to cherish and recognize the values or the those things that bring you joy that can sometimes sort of fade. You may not continue to distinguish them, but there are a lot of wonderful things. I'm sure, you know, listen, we all have warts on a personal level, community level, country level. No place is perfect, but boy, there certainly is a lot of really wonderful things to be experienced here.
Okay. So I think you're totally right, Arthur. I mean, Barcelona is special. And those of us who know that know it's special and we enjoy it every day. We're glad that you could join us today. It's been fun. And we're going to keep the continuity going, you know, over the next few days that you're around, family's around. You've been great guests, which is great. And a good experience, another adventure that you both can have and pass it along. We're going to leave you today with a song from Cher that should be at the core of all of our lives. It's called Believe. Have a great day, Barcelona, and we'll talk with you next week.